Welcome to the Grateful American Radio Show, hosted by author and publisher David Bruce Smith. What did George Washington do that you might not know about? What did Abe Lincoln know that could change the way you think about the Civil War? You'll learn about all that and more on this special show designed to restore excitement in American history. Let's get started. A senior fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center here in Washington, D.C., and a member of the Eisenhower Memorial Commission, and the former chairman of the National Endowment for the Humanities, we are here today with Bruce Cole. I am Hope Katz Gibbs, executive producer of the Grateful American series, here with my co-host David Bruce Smith, founder of the Grateful American Foundation, and we are thrilled to be talking to Bruce about bringing American history to life. Hello and welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Before we launch into our Q&A, though, we want to share your bio with our audience. As we said in the intro, Bruce is a senior fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center here in Washington and a member of the Eisenhower Memorial Commission, and he was the former chair of the NEH. There, he managed a budget of $150 million and a staff of 170, and he was responsible for awards totaling $800 million. Appointed by President George W. Bush, and unanimously confirmed by the Senate in 2001 and again in 2005, Bruce is the longest-serving chairman of the NEH. Under his leadership, he launched key initiatives including We the People program, which was designed to encourage the teaching, study, and understanding of American history and culture, as well as Picturing America, which is used by art teachers to teach the nation's history and culture in 80,000 schools. So we want to know all about that. But first, let's talk about your history. What got you interested in American history and art as well?
Well, I was thinking about that question, and I think there were two things. One was the World Book Encyclopedia, and we had a copy of that in our house. We didn't have many books, but we had that. And my mother was a big reader of it, and she got me interested. The World Book, I think I probably read the whole thing. And then I think my big eureka moment was when I first visited the Western Reserve Historical Society in Cleveland, where I grew up, and saw an exhibition, little dioramas. Those don't exist anymore. And I think it was of life on the Western Reserve. And there was something about that that really captivated me. It was kind of firsthand experience with these little objects. And I think my interest dates from that, you know, eureka moment. And it's interesting because when I was in the endowment, we did an event at the Western Reserve Historical Society. And I told this story. And then I asked if these little dioramas were around. And they were. And they took me down to the basement. And I looked at them and said, that's pretty good. So I think that's where it probably started. But, you know, I mean, I think everybody's interested in history because history is our fourth dimension. I mean, memory is everything. And I'm not going to be able to get home today unless I remember how I came. And so I think everybody is unconsciously interested in history because it is about memory. It's about their memory. It's about our collective memory. So I think in that sense, it's part of all of it.
And your role here in Washington, D.C. is something that I think some D.C. insiders understand, but could you explain it to our broader audience who may not know exactly what the Eisenhower Memorial Commission is or does, as well as the Ethics and Policy Center?
Sure. Let me start with the Ethics and Public Policy Center. Ethics and Public Policy Center is a think tank that works on public policy. And what I do there is two things. One is I'm interested in cultural policy and educational policy, and right on that. But I also have an initiative there called the History and Civic Initiative, which is aimed at improving history education in K-12. Now, there's been a lot of work on history education, but mainly in colleges and universities. But my particular interest is in K-12 because there are an awful lot of students who never go on to university. And there are also a lot of students who never graduate from high school. And that is where I think you get your fundamental knowledge of history. And what I'm working on is a kind of a white paper, which will explore various aspects of K through 12 teaching. So I think we first have to ask ourselves, is there a real problem? I mean, we've been talking about historical amnesia and historical literacy, but how do we know that? Well, we really do have good metrics on that. If you look at the Department of Education's NAEP test, which is their report card, which they do periodically, usually every 10 years, history is the least known subject. About over 50% of high school seniors score below basic on a simple history test. And that you can't do worse than that. That really shows us a problem. And then there have been a lot of other studies. And so we've got a lot of good metrics about this as a problem. And of course, it's a problem in colleges and universities. One of the big problems is that colleges and universities don't have mandatory American history anymore. About 10% of colleges and universities mandate it. So they're not required to take that. And there are good statistics there too. Seniors generally have been given history tests, and they do abysmal. I mean, the majority of them flunk. There's a very interesting longitudinal test which studied freshmen and then seniors at a wide variety of schools, you know, Ivy League, state schools, small privates, and the like. And it was abysmally bad. And in some cases, there was negative learning. In other words, the seniors knew less about American history than they did when they were freshmen. So this is pretty alarming. Now, when I was a chairman and CEO of the American Revolution Center, we also did the first study of adult knowledge of American history. We had Penn Schoen do a very reputable polling firm. And we found three things about this. That over 90% of Americans thought it was really important to know something about American history. Then we asked them to give themselves a grade of their knowledge. And it was mostly B's, C pluses or A minuses with a scattering of A's. And then we gave them a history test. 83% of them got D's or F's. So that says something. I think that's the first time there's been this, as I said, this survey of adult historical literacy or lack of. So there is a real big problem. But my particular interest, as I said, is in K-12. And why is that? You know, why are students doing so badly?
I know there is historical illiteracy in this country, but there also seems to be a contradiction. Even though the test scores are not very impressive at all, things like the Roosevelts are very popular. And that's the first question. Why is that? The other question is, I think there was an educator out of University of Pittsburgh who said that attitudes aren't caught, they're taught. Is that happening anywhere?
I agree with you. I mean, why is something like the Roosevelt so popular? Ken Burns Roosevelt, popular. And that really scored, I think it scored 5 on the Nielsen rating, something like that, which is very, very impressive. Or look at all the bestsellers. David McCullough or Doris Kearns Goodwin or Isaacson.
Or even something like Downton Abbey. I mean, there
Downton
is...
Abbey.
That's...
Well, why is that? And that goes back to your second question. It's caught. I mean, great history is great storytelling. And if you look at the difference between books that are written by academics, which are very difficult to read and very subspecialized, and are read by a handful of people, really. Or if you look at the works by McCullough and the like, who are journalists, they are not trained historians. All those people I mentioned are not trained historians. None of them has a PhD in history. They're so popular because they can tell a good story. Mm-hmm. And that, with our natural inclination, I think, to understand history, is one of the reasons that they're so popular. But I think what happens is people come out. There's been generations of this now who come out of high school or college really knowing very little about American history and realize that and then are captivated and brought back to it by these so-called popularizers. Barbara Tuchman is another example. I mean, Barbara Tuchman said that one of the great things about her career is that she never got a PhD. So she could really learn how to write. And she started off in journalism like all the rest of these people. They don't bury their lead, you know, they know how to tell a great story. But the other part of this is, so, okay, we identify that there is a problem, but so who cares? Why does that matter? You know, whether we know anything about American history or not. And I think that people would say that. But, you know, if you don't know where you've come from, you don't know where you're going.
History
is a great compass to the future. And also, if you don't can't define your rights and your responsibilities and your liberties, then you can't defend them. And that's one of the really great dangers, I think, is there now generations of people who know nothing about their basic rights. They know nothing about how the Republic was formed. They know almost nothing about the Constitution and the Bill of Rights or the Declaration, because they don't get it. I mean, and one of the problems they don't get it is because the teaching of American history is bad. And I don't think it's the teacher's fault. There are many terrific teachers. Often, by the way, the teacher is named coach. But they get out of education school with very little history. I mean, the subject matter knowledge is among history teachers is very, very small. Now, some of them do educate themselves. But, you know, as Will Rogers said, you can't teach what you don't know.
But why is it, say, 30 years ago when I was... I had great history teachers all the way through. I mean, you didn't really hear of, generally, a bad or a boring history teacher then. I mean, education was also a lot less complicated because it wasn't a business. Why is it that there's such a preponderance of not very good teachers?
Well, you know, I think they are good teachers, but they have to really educate themselves because schools of education are telling them a lot about educational philosophy, about social justice. They're telling them a lot about pedagogy, but they're really not telling them, not all the schools of education, but many. I mean, I think anybody who's going to teach history should have the equivalent of a BA in history, so they have subject matter knowledge. But I think there are a lot of good teachers, but they have to overcome, I think, their education. And the other thing is the textbooks are abysmal. They're not interesting. It's a very good book by Diane Ravitch called The Language Police. I can't remember exactly the title of it, where she talks about the making of textbooks, which is really interesting, how textbooks now are really geared to two states, California and Texas, where they're sold mainly, and how these textbooks are really, you know, done by committees who check off various boxes that have to be in there. They mostly pictures or a lot of pictures, and they're fragmented. So if you have a good textbook, an exciting textbook, and a teacher who's really knowledgeable, you're well on your way. But unfortunately, I think that doesn't happen. I don't blame it on the teachers. I really do blame it on the education school. There are a lot of good teachers and inspiring teachers, but it's an uphill battle. So I see this as, you know, this historical amnesia. Actually, that's not the right term, because be an amnesiac, you have to have once known something. Maybe historical literacy is better. As a real national challenge, crisis.
So did the programs that National Endowment of the Humanities, National Endowment of the Arts, put into play, like Picturing America and We the People, did they penetrate the problems in a meaningful way? And how do you know? How do you measure it?
That's good. The metrics on that are very difficult to ascertain. Well, one of the things you can measure is how they're spread. So if you're talking about Picturing America, let me describe it first. That's what we decided to do was try to tell the history of America through pictures. And the reason is that they're in objects. And, you know, a picture is really worth a thousand words. It brings history to people in a way that words can't, and often in a much more dramatic, exciting way. You could read all you want about the Civil War, but you look at those Gardner photographs or Brady photographs of all the dead in Gettysburg. Mm-hmm. That tells you something different. There's no intermediary of words. So we said, okay, let's see if we can tell the story of America through great art. So you get a twofer, you know, you get the great art and you get the story. And he thought we should tell the whole story, the good, the bad, the peaks, the valleys, because you have to tell the whole story of America. It's not a plaster stained story. It's a great story, and it's a story of continual reform and renewal and Americans fall, but they pick themselves up. So while we're not perfect people, we have a great story. So we wanted to tell this whole story. And so we put this 40 pictures together, and we were helped by Robert Smith. This wouldn't have happened without him and his generous contributions. We got ready, put them together. It was quite a long process of getting them together. And we had 40 large-scale, beautifully reproduced pictures. And then we had a teacher's guide, and then we developed an extensive website. We knew we needed to do that with lesson plans, detailed information. And I said, well, okay, if we can get this in 500 schools and public libraries, I'll be happy. I'll consider it a victory. And it went eventually to 80,000 schools and public libraries, including all the Department of Defense schools. And we were flabbergasted and gratified. So that will be in these classrooms, we hope, for many, many decades. So it's hard to gauge what the impact of that will be. But we can sell something about it by the scale. I mean, it's up to the schools to then flesh out the programs. But I know we got pictures of George Washington back in the classroom, of Abraham Lincoln, of civil rights marchers. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is good. Generally, the We the People was an initiative across the endowment to promote the study and understanding of American history on the premise of the fact that it needed to be improved, and also because this was a government agency, this was taxpayers' money. And we thought one of the principal functions of the NEH was to educate Americans about their own history.
Fascinating. Well, we're going to have this conversation in addition with John Gray in a moment, but before we finish with you, we would love to know what you hope your legacy will be.
Well, that I helped in some small way to improve the teaching and understanding of American history.
Wonderful. Do you think you've accomplished that goal?
I hope so.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Bruce Cole. We are looking forward to encouraging kids, parents, grandparents, and all those who love American history to learn more about your books and what you're doing. And that's it for today's episode of the Grateful American Radio Show. Stay tuned for our conversation with John Gray and Bruce Cole. For David Bruce Smith and myself, thank you for listening. We'll talk to you soon. You have been listening to the Grateful American Radio Show, hosted by author and publisher David Bruce Smith. Here's to restoring enthusiasm in history for kids and adults, too.